Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Andrew, we've got a double shot for the good martini, which is always nice, and it comes to us in terms of polling on two important governor's races, one of which we expected to be a little closer than the other, but the delicious part of the one that's probably not going to be that close is that the premise for the campaign of the Democratic nominee is crumbling right in front of her. We're talking about the Wisconsin governor's race as well as the Texas governor's race. In Wisconsin, of course, you've got Scott Walker, who led the charge in the collective bargaining reform and making sure that unionized workers kicked in a little bit more to their benefits program. That was a huge fight in Wisconsin about 3 years ago. There was a recall attempt, which he easily defeated. But he had been shown to be in a pretty tight reelection fight, most likely against Democrat Mary Burke, who is pretty much beholden to the unions. But a new St. Norbert's College and Wisconsin Public Radio poll shows Scott Walker with a 16-point lead, 56-40 among likely voters, 55-40 among registered voters, and that's good for two reasons. Number one, he's way above 50, and number two, obviously, he's got a big lead. Down in Texas, Greg Abbott, the attorney general, is by far the favorite in this race against Wendy Davis, who is running basically on the heels of her fight to protect late-term abortions down in Texas. But in a new poll, the favorability ratings definitely favor Abbott. Overall, 40-27. Davis underwater, 47% unfavorable to 33% favorable. But here's the fun part, Andrew. Among women, Abbott, 35% favorable, 27% unfavorable. For Wendy Davis, 32% favorable, 46% unfavorable. So two great polls to start the day out here.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start in Wisconsin. Like you said, you know, Scott Walker, he faced a recall, as we all know, a few years ago. This would be his third election in 4 years. And you would think maybe facing a recall, he'd be having another tough race. There was one poll about a month or so ago that showed him being pretty close, but this one just shows him kind of blowing Burke out of the water. Now, probably once Election Day ramps up and all the ads are out there and everything, it'll tighten up a little bit. But, I mean, if you're Scott Walker and you're in a purplish state and you faced a recall earlier, you have to be feeling pretty good about a 15-point lead and the fact that Burke really isn't cutting into his lead. I was reading the other day, the Madison campus newspaper had a whole editorial that was basically saying Burke should just close shop and give up. Look, we're not big Walker fans, but Burke just isn't going to be able to keep up with him, keep up with, you know, his popularity, be able to keep up with the reforms he's instituted thus far. So what was probably going to be a challenge for Burke is now even a bigger uphill climb for her. But meanwhile, over in Texas, yeah, sort of the whole war on women meme and Wendy Davis being the champion of women isn't quite panning out as the polls are indicating. I mean, 46% unfavorable among women in Texas, so effectively half of women don't agree with her, and she's apparently the voice of women. Greg Abbott isn't. They're trying the typical war on women tactics, whether it's equal pay, when it comes to abortion, when it comes to all those things. They're trying to paint him in that way, and Davis's appeal just isn't registering with Texas women.
Yeah, and 33% favorable, 47% unfavorable. I haven't seen the actual matchup poll on this race, but based on what we see here and in other polls we've already seen earlier, it doesn't look like she's going to get much traction. She is coming across as a one-trick pony, and that's pretty much why she's got the nomination. But when it comes to a sustained campaign examination of the past and examination of her policy positions, not only is she looking pretty flimsy, but in a state like Texas, the reason she's really popular among Democrats is not going to make her endeared to a lot of Texas voters. As much as the Democrats want to turn it blue, it's not blue yet.
Yeah, exactly. She's more of a national political celebrity than perhaps a, you know, Texas celebrity. And this all plays into, again, the whole narrative that they're going to turn Texas blue. This is the year they're going to do it. Evidently not.
Well, hopefully these numbers hold up, certainly in that race. All right, on to the bad martini now. And Andrew, it just seemed like we finally got rid of Kathleen Sebelius, because we did. Just last week, she announced her resignation, went out in fine Sebelius form by missing a page of her farewell statement. We thought she was going to head off into the political sunset. Even liberal publications were saying, you know, this is probably the end of her political career. Perhaps not. There are now reports out from the New York Times and other sources that Kathleen Sebelius is being encouraged to run for the U.S. Senate seat that Pat Roberts is defending. He's a three-term Republican running for a fourth term. He's in his late 70s. Kathleen Sebelius, of course, is a former two-term governor of Kansas, winning twice pretty comfortably in a very red state like Kansas. And so even if she were to run, and she has till very early June to file, Andrew, this is almost a little bit too close for comfort. Given her popularity right now, I think Pat Roberts would probably survive, but given her name recognition, previous statewide success, pretty sure I don't want her in this race.
It's not the same Kathleen Sebelius that left Kansas when she, you know, accepted the HHS position at the beginning of the Obama presidency. So it's a slightly different Kathleen Sebelius, but she is clearly still a major player in the state. Like you said, she's one governor there in what is a very red state. And so she's able to appeal to Kansas voters in some way. At first, you might think the whole Obamacare stink might sort of bring her down, but you never know. She is a national name. She does have a lot of national recognition. There could be donors that sort of rally to her and sort of see her, you know, again, as perhaps a beacon of the direction Obamacare will go, whether it'll stay popular. And so she could get a lot of funding in that regard. So my initial reaction is, yeah, okay, Kathleen Sebelius, try it again. Let's see how it goes. But I think you do want to be a little worried if that's the case.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly where the state is. I mean, they haven't voted for a Democrat on the presidential level in decades and decades. But Sam Brownback, the current Republican governor, the polling there seems to be very, very tight with the Democrat. And like we say in a lot of red states, a Kansas Democrat is not like a Washington Democrat. And so the fact that Kathleen Sebelius now is a Washington Democrat would make her challenge of Pat Roberts even tougher. So he probably would win, but if she would just go away, I think most conservatives would be pretty happy.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think so as well. And again, I think if she does run, that's how they'll try and paint her. Well, she's a Washington Democrat. She hasn't been in Kansas. She hasn't been here for the last 6 years. But again, she is a big name, and big names always are scary, and you never want to take them for granted. So I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it, but it is something to keep in mind.
Given how much she's probably burned out from the 5+ years as being
HHS
secretary.
Yeah, that's what I'm just more surprised about. That she has the energy to sort of give it another go. I thought she would have wanted to, you know, take it easy at least for a little bit longer, not jump right in.
Yeah, my suspicion is she'll end up not deciding to jump into this against a well-funded and relatively popular incumbent. So, all right, on to the crazy martini and another person we had hoped would go away, but apparently has not, and that's former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who, of course, is very big on restricting many different things in our lives, but apparently his biggest issue is guns, as we've seen in previous campaigns around the country. He and his political action committee have inserted themselves into congressional and Senate and even gubernatorial races around the country. We saw it in the Virginia governor's race last year to some extent. He's basically trying to get behind the fiercest gun control advocates that he can find, and he's even willing to go after Democrats who aren't good on the issue from his perspective, saying that if you agree with me on 99% of other issues, but you're not good on guns, I'm still going to go after you because that's the one that really matters. So it's possible he could annoy a few Democrats, but he's really going after conservatives here, Andrew, and it's hard to know exactly what his track record has been. It seems to be mixed at best, but for him to be a fly in the ointment in all these races certainly isn't going to be any fun.
He's pledging a $50 million contribution to these midterms to basically support gun control advocates, like you said, whether on either side of the party, in either party, but it'll most likely be geared towards conservatives. So I'm just surprised by sort of his arrogance in the sense that he's pretty sure that this effort is going to get him into heaven. He told the New York Times when they asked him, what do you think about your legacy as a gun safety expert? He says, well, I'm telling you, if there is a God, when I get to heaven, I'm not stopped to be interviewed. I'm heading straight in. So apparently he sort of read something that indicated his efforts are bound to get him through the pearly gates. But gun control, like you said, it's a mixed bag. Sure, maybe it worked in some places, but in Colorado, we had that recall a year ago of those state senators. It strikes me as one of those things that, as we were talking about a year ago, Michael Bloomberg maybe isn't the best face to have on this thing. Maybe this is an effort he truly believes in, but his name just, I don't think, is the best one to have attached to it if that's what he's looking to do. But hey, he has $50 million he wants to spend on it, and I say go for it. Let's see how it pans out in states like Arkansas, Louisiana, Alaska, all those red state Democrats. Let's see how they feel about it.
Yeah, as Jim Garrity is fond of saying, whenever Bloomberg's gun control advocacy comes up, it's pretty easy for him to take that position when for the last 12 years, and perhaps now to some extent, given the fact that he can afford it, he's had a very heavily armed detail, so he personally probably doesn't need a gun, but other people who want to protect themselves probably do.
Exactly, and I just don't think he's the right face for this sort of thing. And I think he's had more losses than victories over the past year or so, but again, he's revving up to do it again.
Well, he couldn't even get it done in the U.S. Senate last year, so whether he can affect that much change in purple or even red states is yet to be seen, but we will see. Andrew, great to have you with us today. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Andrew Johnson of Nash Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and be sure to join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.